for Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. It's the Palaver Audiocast with Lost in Bronx. Episode 10, Smoke and Mirrors. The sun and the sea, rescue me. Hello, this is Lost in Bronx. As most of you, my gentle listeners, may know, I currently reside within the sunny state of Arizona. As I type these words, it's a hot day outside, and the fans within seem to only blow hot air. They remind me so much of me. They also remind me of a near miss we had a few weeks ago, a rather large wildfire that raged within a veritable stone's throw. If you've a mind to it, look up the Wallow Fire, that's W-A-L-L-O-W, on your favorite search engine. 500,000 acres and still burning, Jack. But we're no longer in danger, thank goodness. The wind was always with us and it moved off. Something to be happy for, certainly. And I am. No doubt or argument, but there was one especially spooky week or so when the flames could have gone in any direction, including ours, and for a time, I found myself face to face with the idea that we could lose everything. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we've built anything much out here. I wouldn't even go so far as to say we've built lives. Truly, that's a subject for another episode unto itself, but I can say that, small as it is, shabby as it all is, it's ours, and we own it all outright. The house, the land, the car, and everything in or upon them is ours. We don't owe a bank or a mortgage broker or anything. I won't say we're debt-free exactly, but the material things are all ours. Now, I'm not crowing here. Good golly gosh, if the place was your own, you'd likely be ashamed to admit it, but it's a place, and we live there. So, that would be a tough thing to just see burn, wouldn't you agree? Despite how I feel about it exactly, I would hate to have to start over from scratch. If this place went, we'd have nothing to work with. I mean, the insurance would barely cover our collective loss. So, with a massive smoke cloud looming large in both the vista and our minds, we found ourselves making the decision of what would stay and what would go. We don't own a truck, despite it being truck country, and so our list of must-have possessions were decided upon almost exclusively by their easy portability. Imagine that for a second. Think about your own life and what you'd choose to bring if your cargo capacity was limited to any room you could claim around the physical space that three people and two cats take up in your compact car. But it never came to that, so this is a dodged bullet, or just an intellectual exercise, as you like. Sure, disaster could always strike again, and this time be right on target, so I shouldn't gloat or feel complacent. And I don't, really. In and of itself, I wasn't sure how I felt for some weeks. Relieved not to have to deal with disaster, certainly. As hard as it might have been on Mrs. Bronx and myself, Little Bronx would have been destroyed by this event. No two ways about it. A fragile boy under these circumstances would be scarred for life. But such is the nature of disaster. So it's a good thing it turned away. Then again, there's something to be said for a fresh start. No, I'm not sorry it missed us. I'm sorry it would have taken an uncontained wildfire to have prompted change. See, a fire can't be reasoned with. A fire doesn't care about the side effects of total material loss. A fire only burns. People, on the other hand, well, people rationalize. People make mistakes. People can be hurt. We talk ourselves out of those new beginnings sometimes. That can be a good thing. You just can't ever be sure without a fire at your heels. See, 'cause a fire is easy. You could lose it all. The house, the stuff, all of it. Easy. Because the fire makes the choice for you. It takes that responsibility away and lets you be a victim. a victim instead of a perpetrator. Because if it all goes to hell afterward, after the fire, well, what can you expect, right? Your life's in a shambles. And there's aid, and there's programs, and there's sympathy, so much sympathy. And you start over again with all that behind you. The tragedy, yes, but the healing that follows it as well. But if you do it yourself, not the fire, I mean, but the starting over part, the reboot of your lives, well, that's on your own shoulders, on your own head. And you carry the old life with you, like a snail carries its shell. And that strikes me as a tragedy all its own. The opportunity to shed the crap of one's life and start anew, to start afresh, should be looked upon as a rare gift, one that we all ought to embrace when given the chance. It's true, though, that people can reinvent themselves and their lives because we carry that wildfire within. If we're willing to chance it, you let your hopes or your passions hold sway for a bit, and you can never tell which way the wind will blow you. The other day, my wife gave me a haircut. She's not especially skilled in that regard, but she owns a set of clippers, and I only ever get a complete shearing anyway, so it's well within her skill set. It had been a very long time since I'd had short hair. My thinning tresses were well over my shoulders, and it was past time to lose them. A new face confronted me in the mirror after that. A different face for a different man who, maybe, could do a few new things. No guarantees, of course, but in that moment, he certainly looked like he had more potential than that long, stringy-haired middle-ager who was feeling even less thrilled to get up in the morning than he used to. Does a haircut really constitute the kind of sea change in a person's life that a massive wildfire can? Well, I guess it would be arrogant to say yes, but there are some faint parallels here, if you'll allow me to pursue them for a moment. I say that the haircut made the new man, but obviously it was the change itself that was refreshing. And certainly, that's all I'm really getting at. Change is good. It's inevitable, inexorable, and it brings new opportunities. It also brings new constraints and new burdens, but if you're burdened anyway with a life so rut-filled as to be essentially hollow, then how can a break from the past, even a small, silly one like a new haircut, why can't that be a positive thing? If you hate the new hair, if you hate the new town, the new life you chose, well, maybe you didn't really have a choice in the matter. I mean, even if the exact style of haircut you chose turns out to make you look bad, even if the new place you end up in turns out to be less than what you hoped for, even less maybe than what you believed you had before, keep in mind that you were motivated to make a change for a reason. If you wanted something new badly enough to pursue said something, odds are very good that whatever the hell it is you had before wasn't working for you. On some level, at least, you needed something new in your life. Maybe not for all time, and again, maybe not exactly what you ended up with, but something. You needed something, and you tried to find it. And why exactly that should be so bad, I don't know. Why exactly it should take long, stringy hair and a silly-looking head, or the mindless power of nature to force such changes upon us, I also couldn't say. Where is our conscious will in all this? When enough is enough, when I'm sick of my hair or finally frightened enough of the flames to make a move, where is my free will in all that? I don't know. And I strongly suspect that it doesn't matter. I'm going to go out on a limb here and propose that all choice is circumstantial. That all choice is due to outside pressures, mounting slowly or striking fast. Even the deeply personal is either our interactions with external forces or acceptance or conflict with inherent ones, over which we have no control, over which our will is immaterial. We are all running from the fire, in other words. We are all strangers in the mirror. I don't expect most people who listen to this to necessarily agree, but it's important to see where you end and the world begins. Can you spot the demarcation? Do you see that place? From a bird's eye view, perhaps so, but standing on the ground in the midst of the calamity, underneath the clippers, when you are down here, there really is no difference. The wax and wane of the world's fortunes, or of the pressures of predestined or ingrained predilections, all of these occur independently of your will and subtly guide or manhandle you, there's not much difference in the end, toward decisions you might not want to make. They could well point you toward situations where you can only react instead of create. And make no mistake, that's what I'm talking about here. Creation as an act of will. Creation of decision. Creation of the very circumstances of your life wherein that decision can be made. My point is that such creation is illusory. We are all victims of circumstance. And one would need to be a god to be free of the universe's sticky webs that entangle our wants and needs, that render us powerless to do anything other than run from the flames or sit mutely under the shears, like sheep, like animals wired by evolution or divine plan, as you like, and you will never, ever on this earth be free to choose as you will. At its best, life is a series of multiple choice questions. Those who choose the wrong answers are marked down. Those who pencil in their own answers are labeled mad, or maybe life simply prunes them and lets them fall to the ground to wither away. I believe this is the nature of the world. It is a blending of us and everything else, and free will is virtually non-existent. Now, don't be so quick to judge me here. All of that was just the wind-up to this pitch. Given that we are not gods, given that we live in existence wherein our choices are reflections of our circumstances, we can, nonetheless, be free to create. Our materials and prejudices may be prescribed, but the exact recipe we use can, indeed, be unpredictable. Recombination of base materials, resamples, reboots, yes, even of our lives. You cannot choose freely without being mad or suicidal, but you can create, as in the kitchen, the bedroom, or upon the canvas. You can take materials and inspirations and hopes and dreams crafted by others, up to and including the very genetic material of your being, and put a wholly original spin upon them. The number of possible combinations of all materials involved in pretty much any act of creation assures originality. Truly, you couldn't hope for anything else. If, as I do, you define the divine as the creation of something from nothing, then you can further define the human as the creation of something from something. Through no extra effort on your part, any creative work will be a mark all your own, a point of attention that says, without any need to elaborate or any confusion to those of future times, with a desire to understand that you were here, that you chose to create something from something, that you were human after all. You know, that fire is still burning as I record this. It's so far away from us now that I can't see the smoke anymore. In a superstitious view of the universe, to rail against good fortune would be to invite bad fortune, and a wise man would hold his tongue. Yet how can I see this as anything other than a lost opportunity as every day spent entombed in a life of practicality is. But with all that being said, I got to tell you, my new do is styling, yo. Okay, well, here we are, summertime, July. Summertime in the desert of Arizona, even the high desert here. It isn't always that great, but we don't have much humidity. Today was an exception. It was actually rather humid. We were up to 20%, and it felt like we were drowning. So I guess we're pretty acclimated after all. I wanted to get a new episode of Palaver out. It's been quite a while now. And I didn't, you know, I mean, pod fading and all that. I didn't want it to seem like this was pod fading. But the fact is, I didn't have a lot that was on my mind. This show kind of is just me thinking about stuff, expressing how I feel about things. Sometimes they're unimportant things. Sometimes they're, well, maybe a little more so. But I did want to get this out, and the fire was inspiration for thought. I don't know. People were nervous. They had town meetings nearby, and they reassured everyone and tried to dispel rumors and myths that were going around. And I think they did a pretty good job overall. And certainly my hat is off to all the brave firefighters who have put in their time and risked their safety and lives in the fight against this thing. A couple of towns were burned out. Greer and Springerville, they were evacuated and there were buildings burned and such. They're over closer to the New Mexico border, and the fire did finally cross into New Mexico. It has nothing to do with that fire that's over by Los Alamos, where they're, you know, busy sweating that one, trying to hold that fire at bay. But good luck on that. Don't need radioactive smoke spreading across the country on top of everything else, but maybe they'll really go for it. I don't know, and do their best to put it out. I hope so. So anyway, what else is new? I've been working on Eddie K. That's my audio series. It's a comedy series about the eponymous character, Eddie K., Eddie Kasnovsky. And I'm up to episode 2. I have the script for episode 3 all ready to go. I've been working on the script for episode 4. I think I'll need to do a rewrite on that. But yeah, it's chugging along. I don't have any particular dates or deadlines that I'm trying to hit. I don't know. It would probably be better if I did, but then I'd have to focus a lot more than I really have time to. So I just kind of squeeze it out while I can. And, you know, in a way, that's how Palaver is being done as well. I'm hoping Eddie K will have more regularity to it, but we'll see. I have been cast in a new show. It's not my show. I didn't create it, and I'm not producing it, but I am an actor in it. And it's a show called, an audio show. This is all audio, by the way. An audio show called This Thing of Ours. And it's a show about the American mafia, the Italian mob, set in the 70s. And I play a mob enforcer named Joey Eightball. And all I'm going to say is that this thing is going to rock. The casting, maybe outside of myself, but other than that, the casting is pretty good. The main character, the guy that's playing a character called Carmine, who's the narrator and the character they follow, he's got an amazing voice, just an amazing voice. And it turns out that he's an actual professional voice actor in New York City. So that's great to have him on this thing. It'll make all the difference. But another great thing about the show is the writing, which is marvelous. A fellow named Scott Spaulding is the creative power behind this show. And I'm just really looking forward to it. No dates yet as to when it's coming out. Scott wants a couple of episodes in the can before we do that to, you know, just to smooth over any release bumps. You know, Palaver and Eddie K are perfect examples of what not to do. And I think he's trying to avoid that sort of thing. And that's just great. So it'll be a few months yet, but I'm really happy to be a part of it. I'm very proud of how I think it's going to turn out. And we'll see where it goes. Let's see. What else am I doing? I am in the midst of another intermittent series. This one for Hacker Public Radio. And it's a series on audio drama called Theater of the Imagination. Episode 4 should be out very soon. And I'm, you know, working on that. And basically, it's just as I learn new things about audio drama, I like to put them down so that others can maybe benefit from that. And it also helps me think about good approaches, bad approaches, maybe just in general to appreciate what I have learned and to think about any of the myths that I want to let go of about the whole process of audio drama and of audio acting. So I'm having fun doing that. It comes out when I have something to say, but so far, I think it's turning out okay. Let's see. I have been contributing regularly to LNB's audio diary, which I've been uploading to my site. I'll give you the address for that at the end of the show. And that's just random thoughts. I think I talked about it last episode. It's just random stuff. It's in Speaks format only. So if you don't like Speaks or if you can't play Speaks, you're out of luck. But there's some pretty good stuff there because it's just my daily views. Sometimes it's an update of what I'm up about. Sometimes it's things that are bothering me or just stuff that randomly comes to mind. And some people like that sort of slice of life element. Some could care less. If you could care less, you know, you're not missing anything. So there is no RSS feed for that. If people are interested in such a thing, then I'll put an RSS feed up. But otherwise, I just plop them up when I feel like it. So if you're interested in them, you'll have to actually go to the site. Let's see. Now, here's a weird thing. I've been using my EPC a lot lately instead of my desktop. Now, the reason isn't because of a technical problem with the machine. The machine is just as good as it always was. What I'm having a problem with is the chair that I sit in while I use my desktop machine. My chair broke. It's an old wooden kitchen chair that we picked up, you know, as a used hand-me-down thing from some people that we knew years ago, and I don't even know who they were. So we've had it for a long time. It owes me nothing, and it's ugly as sin, and it fell apart. I mean, it finally fell apart. I mean, I'm sitting on it, and it started, and I'm all over the, you know, floor with this thing, and pieces all over the place. Well, I tried gluing it back together, and that didn't work so well because I don't really have any wood glue and I never think to pick it up. I used Elmer's, and in other wooden projects, plain Elmer's has worked pretty well, but it's not a wood glue and it doesn't fill in the gaps. And, you know, you put a little pressure on it and it gives way. And that happened again. You know, I glued it up, got it all going. I sat down and within 2 days it was all broken again. And I didn't want to use, you know, like screws or hardware on this because I'd already done that. About a year ago, this thing started to go, and I went at it with my meager skills, and it worked for a while. It held together again for a while, but it was never a very good job, and it finally fell apart again. And I was like, you know, no, I'm not doing that again. I'm going to do the one thing I do know how to do fairly well, and that's, ta-da, paper mache. Yes, believe it or not, I've paper mache'd my chair, and it's holding up really well. It's solid as a rock. I can, you know, that's something I know how to use. And paper mache and wood actually go together very, very well. So that's where I am right now. I have my chair back. I still have to anchor the seat back on. It's just resting on it right now, and I have to anchor the seat back on in some fashion that I haven't quite figured out just yet, but I will. But my chair is back in action, so I get to actually use my computer chair in front of my computer once again. Now, I have no complaints about the EPC. It has saved my bacon. I'm very happy with it. It's an EPC 701 Surf. That's the 2 gig model. That is, it's got 2 gigs of onboard storage, and it uses, I think it's got 512 megs of RAM and a slow Celeron processor. The thing is already a dinosaur. I mean, it's a couple of years old now, and it's it was underpowered when it hit the market, and it's just gotten, you know, weaker by comparison as the years have gone by. In order to keep this thing running pretty snappily, I put Puppy Linux on there. Now, this is a version of Puppy that's designed specifically for the EPC, and it works really well. The one thing is I have it tweaked so that it loads right into RAM when you turn it on, and it's super snappy when you do that. I mean, it's very fast, and it feels like a modern sort of, I guess, netbook might feel, even though it's older. The trade-off on that is, of course, with limited RAM, because I'm using a lot of it for the operating system, I can't do a lot of things that you might want to do. Like, I can't, you know, it gets really choppy when it comes to playing video. First off, the video capabilities are very, very limited anyway, but, you know, it's still very limited. You know, I think I've taken it about as far as I can with the operating system on there. So all of this is a roundabout way of saying I'll be happy to get back onto my main machine on a regular basis. It's worked really well. I wrote this entire episode on the EPC. I checked my mail, and I, you know, did our Netflix updates on, you know, adjusting our queue, and, you know, I was on the IRC every day. So it's been able to, I watched a movie even. I have a portable DVD player that I hooked up to it, and I'm able to watch movies on it. It does what I want it to do. It's just old, and it's slower and a little choppy, and it's a little crashy, not too bad, but a little bit. And, I'm happy to have it, but I'm also happy to get back to my real machine. Let's see, what else? I've been working on my Flog intermittently. I have not been very good about keeping updated with that. I only had a couple of posts this month or this past month, and nothing so far. You know, I'm sure that if I posted every day, I might, you know, get more out of it myself when I'm writing, and I might have more to say. I mean, because the more you do, the more you have to do. You know, I mean, that is to say, the more you write, the more you have to write about. And so I probably ought to do more on that. I just, you know, I haven't. And I try to get some in there, and I have. I've done some work, but, you know, whatever. I'll get back to it. I will. It's something I do enjoy, and it's something that I can do, you know, regular sort of blog work. I tried that a while ago, a year, 2 years ago, maybe even. I had a WordPress thing, and it just, you know, I couldn't be bothered with it, and it just really never felt right, and I didn't understand the whole idea of doing the themes, and then there was feedback, and there was spam, and there was, I mean, it was just freaking nightmare. I hated it, and I like this so much better, so this is what I'll continue doing. Okay, and finally, I wanted to mention, in case, you know, it isn't well known, we recorded the final episode of Information Underground the other day. That's Klaatu, Deep Geek, and myself. Yes, that's right. Information Underground is dead. If the episode hasn't gone out yet, then you heard it here first, folks. We haven't been getting back to it. And we decided that we didn't like exactly how we were doing it before. And yet no one, myself included, wanted to take on the work and responsibility of upgrading it, putting it, you know, because like palaver, Information Underground was being served up from a Gopher server, and it didn't have a proper website, and we only released in Speaks format, and a bunch of other things. And these were things that we decided in retrospect we wanted changed. So those things needed changing, right? But nobody wanted to do it, and nobody had the time. And we were all doing tons of stuff. I mean, we all have multiple shows that we're working on. We all have lives. And, you know, the other guys, anyway, have work issues. I have home life issues that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And, you know, all of these things put together have made it difficult to, you know, even get together most times. And so we decided, rather than continue to let this thing die a slow, you know, horrible death, we'd put an end to it. So we recorded one final episode to say goodbye and also to, I guess, go over the things that we thought were important and what we learned. It was fun. It was really fun, and it opened up a lot of avenues. You know, not the show specifically necessarily, but the collaboration with those two really great guys. And I'm really happy and very proud to have been a creative force behind Information Underground with Klaatu and Deep Geek. We all contributed, we all worked on it, and we all, you know, I think had fun. I myself learned an awful lot, and I'll miss that part of it. But its time had come and gone. So that's it for this one. Palaver made it to the big 1-0, baby. Is that a milestone? Well, it is for me. It's 9 more than I ever thought I'd manage when I started it, so let the pigeons loose! Let the festivities begin and let the dancing in the streets commence. Who knows, I might just manage another 10 or so. It'll probably be or so, but I wanted to be at least partially upbeat here at the end of this one. If you want to contact me, you can. My email is lostinbronx@gmail.com. That's LOSTNBRONX at Gmail. If you want to check out my site, you can. That's info-underground.net/LNB. We are keeping the Information Underground domain, at least for the foreseeable future. And my content isn't changing its locale anytime soon. You'll find the older episodes of this show there, as well as my vlog. That is to say, my blog that is hosted on a Gopher server. You'll also find my audio fiction and the audio diary and a few other things. Feel free to indulge. This has been Lost in Bronx. Take care. The music for this episode is a piece called Rescue Me by Copperhead and can be found on dig.ccmixter.org. This episode of Palaver is copyright 2011 and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike Unported 3.0 license. Feel free to use it for any purpose, even commercial. Rescue me. It's gonna keep me above the water once again. Once again.